Get to Old Navy for star-spangled style. Right now, everything's on sale, up to 60% off. That's right, get everything from tees, shorts, dresses, and swim, all at 60% off. Now till July 7th at Old Navy and OldNavy.com. Valid through 7/7, select styles only.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The business station.
So good morning, Dr. Michael. So let's start with your overall outlook on Asian economies for the year. What do you think will be the primary growth drivers for 2018?
Well, thanks. Good morning. The outlook for this year is actually still pretty positive. We do actually expect growth to slow down very slightly in most Asian economies this year. This is mainly because the external demand impulse from the U.S., Europe, and Japan, and China, we think has maybe already peaked, or certainly over the next couple of quarters, you'll see those economies collectively slowing down. And Asia is a region of very export-sensitive economies, so as that external demand growth slows, overall GDP growth in most countries will slow down. But it's a very gradual process. For most countries, they're talking about sort of a quarter of a percent of GDP, maybe 0.5% slowdown this year. And we do see upside risks to this outlook. For example, in the U.S., where we think growth currently is going to peak in year-on-year terms in the current quarter around 3%, the recent tax reforms and the current budget negotiations ongoing this week both look like they might deliver a much stronger fiscal impulse to the U.S. this year than we had been expecting. So there's maybe quite significant upside risk in the U.S. Europe has been surprisingly positive for the last year. We expect growth to be stable there, but particularly if the U.S. is doing a little bit better, growth in Europe might even be a little bit stronger. So the base case is for a very modest slowdown with very potentially very significant upside risks. In terms of the mix of growth, that's primarily an export story. Domestic demand in most countries in Asia, particularly household consumption, looks to be very stable. It has been over the last year or so, and likely we think through this year it will be. What we do see is households seem to be relying less on credit to support consumption in the current environment, which is a healthy thing because eventually interest rates are going up, and so it's a good thing that people are starting to think more about repaying some of the debt as incomes are firming up a bit rather than continuing to borrow.
Now, you mentioned credit, but we note that China is on a deleveraging campaign. So how much do you think that will affect the broader Asian growth story, you know, despite those upside risks that you mentioned earlier?
Well, what's interesting is that the evidence still, I think, strongly suggests that China is a much less important driver of growth in Asia than the U.S. and Europe. In fact, you only have to look back over the last 18 months or so and see the revival of growth in most Asian economies at a time when Chinese growth has been stable or, by the end of last year, we think slightly lower. So when we think about what deleveraging might mean for the rest of the region, I think there's two ways it might be relevant. And the first one's actually quite positive. For most of the last 7 or 8 years, international investors have been very worried about an imminent financial crisis in China because they've seen this significant increase in China's debt burden. And that has made them, at the margin, reluctant to invest even in other countries in Asia because the perception is that if China went into a crisis, there would be very significant negative spillovers to the rest of the region. So China's deleveraging by reducing objectively the risk of something going horribly wrong in China is actually paving the way potentially for significant capital inflows into the region. And you only have to look at how equity markets have opened this year to see that possibly that's already beginning to happen. Now, there is a growth impact, I think, potentially from China. If deleveraging perhaps is more aggressive than we expect and the economy slows down more than we expect, what we do see in terms of growth spillovers from China to the rest of the region is less China as an importer, but more through commodity prices. Slower growth in China is likely to lead to at least stable, if not lower, energy prices and minerals prices, iron ore and copper and the like. Now, in Asia broadly, you have a group of countries in Southeast Asia that are commodity exporters, at least relative to the overall export basket. They do export commodities like Malaysia, Indonesia, and Thailand. And then in Northeast Asia, you have countries that, by and large, are importing those commodities. So if at the margin Chinese growth weakens more than people expect and commodity prices fall, that would actually support higher growth in commodity importing countries and would have possibly a modest slowdown drag effect on Southeast Asia. I would point out that Malaysia has been remarkably stable through what has been a very large oil price cycle over the last few years. So really, I'm thinking more of the potential impact on a place like Indonesia or Thailand than Malaysia.
Now, Doctor, earlier you mentioned the expected moderation for Asia's growth this year, and we are already seeing it with the likes of India, right? They recently revised its 2018 GDP forecast downwards, down to 6.5%. Is this primarily due to domestic factors, or once again, this is a global story here?
No, I think this is mostly domestic. In fact, you know, you'll recall that India went through two significant domestic shocks over the last sort of 12 to 18 months. The first was demonetization, when the largest, the bulk of the cash in the economy was deemed non-legal tender, and people had to exchange it for new banknotes, and the banknotes weren't ready, and it led to a period of time when people shifted to non-cash means of payments. And it transpired that a lot of small businesses in particular were simply not ready. And that demonetization, which was completed in a very short period of time, but had a protracted impact on the economy, it turned out, much longer and deeper than had been anticipated. And then the second shock was the introduction of the nationwide value-added tax in the middle of last year. That, again, is something that should make the Indian economy more efficient in the medium to long term, but it turned out had a very significant impact in terms of disrupting supply chains. Apparently, many firms lowered production in the weeks leading into the introduction of the GST because they weren't sure how inventories, for example, would be taxed. And that has taken a while longer to recover from than we had expected. And so growth has been held back over the last year by these two domestic shocks. Both of those, we think, are already sort of disappearing. So, in fact, our forecast for the economy this year is rather more positive than the government's. We think growth is going to return to sort of above 7.5% in the second half of this year. The forecast for the year is, in fact, 7.5% on average, on the expectation that these two drags from 12 and 18 months ago sort of gradually dissipate.
Yeah, so perhaps some of these effects being transitory in nature. Got it. Dr. Michael, let's switch from GDP to monetary policy. You know, given that the Fed has penciled in 3 U.S. rate hikes, will Asian central banks be prompted to maintain that spread in interest rates?
Probably not. I mean, I think there's two factors that are going to influence central bank policy in the next year or two. The first, obviously, is inflation. Inflation in most countries has been rising at a moderate pace over the last 18 months or so, since oil prices bottomed out in 2015. Up until now, it's not been particularly worrying. Our expectation is that inflation will continue to rise at a similar pace, so add another maybe 0.5% inflation in most countries. Interestingly, Malaysia is a place where we think inflation actually will be lower this year. But in most countries, inflation will be moderately higher, and that's getting central banks already, you've seen, turning more hawkish. Late last year, the Bank of Korea and even the People's Bank of China raised interest rates. So that's one factor that I think is common to most countries, that inflation and a healthy growth environment will dictate central banks feeling they no longer need to keep monetary policy so loose. The second one, and this I think will be important in terms of the timing of rate hikes, is the currency. In an environment like we have now, where people are convinced in markets that the dollar is weak, the dollar's had in the recent days, has been particularly weak, I don't see Asian central banks rushing to raise interest rates at a time when their currencies are tending to appreciate. But you can imagine at some point, you know, the Fed raising rates, and our view is the Fed's going to go 4 times this year and 3 times next year. And at some point, these higher Fed rate hikes and higher U.S. interest rates generally will, I think, begin to put pressure on Asian currencies. And so the combination of slightly higher inflation and depreciating currencies, I think, is what's going to trigger central banks to raise rates this year. But in most places, only 1 or 2 rate hikes this year and maybe 1 or 2 more next year.
Doctor, if we may, break it down to the Malaysian context then. So you pointed out that Malaysia's inflation is expected to be lower this year, presumably due to the higher base that was set in 2017. So you got inflation, perhaps the anomaly compared to what's happening on the global stage. Our currency, yeah, is strengthened against the US dollar. And also you've got GDP expected to be resilient. So how do you think Bank Negara Malaysia specifically will move when it comes to monetary policy for 2018?
So my expectation is that we'll get one rate hike in Malaysia. Inflation, as I said before, will probably be lower on average this year. I think it's going to probably dip around the middle of the year and then be rising late in the year. So my expectation is sometime in the second half with a bias to sort of the last quarter of the year, we'll probably get a rate hike from Bank Negara. I do think the currency, which has been, like most Asian currencies, stronger than we had expected in recent weeks, I do think at some point these four rate hikes from the Fed, or three, say, by the time Bank Negara goes, will start to weaken the currency. And so it will be that combination of inflation having bottomed out, say, early Q3, and then a slightly weaker currency, and that's enough for Bank Negara to go once. Again, in the context of most other countries in Asia this year, we think probably one or two rate hikes, and then probably another one in 2019.
Got it. Let's zoom back out to the Asian context again. So given, and actually the global stage even, so given tensions on the Korean Peninsula, how much is geopolitical risk at play for 2018, or be it for various asset classes or even the monetary policy outlook or even growth projections?
Well, the thing about geopolitical risks is that, you know, whenever you ask any investor or an economist at the beginning of the year what are the main risks that sort of keep you awake at night, invariably geopolitics is something, because it's something that markets always find it very difficult to price in. And sort of human nature is such that we tend to ignore these low probability, awful possibility events. So when you talk to strategists, sort of military strategists, security experts about, for example, what's going on in Korea, they would assign anywhere from sort of a, you know, 5% to 30% probability of some kind of actual conflict on the Korean Peninsula over the next year or two. When you ask investors what they think, they would say, ooh, maybe 10%. When you look at what seems to be priced in, none of it. It's completely binary in that one worries that you wake up one day and something has happened that forces the market to price in something awful. Now, where I think, in a sense, people are looking at that particular situation, perhaps too benignly, is we don't need war on the Korean Peninsula. God help us. I mean, we hope we don't. But imagine how markets would react if people got wind of the idea that U.S. citizens were being advised to leave Seoul. So it could be something far short of what people think is the risk that could suddenly tip the balance in favor of pricing in an awful event that is not priced in. And then beyond North Korea, of course, I mean, this is a diverse region of, a dozen countries at least that people are looking at. And there's always the sort of normal course of elections. You'll have an election this year. Indonesia will have local elections. There's the ebb and flow of tensions between China and its neighbors over the status of Taiwan or the South China Sea. So there's lots to worry us of a geopolitical nature. And I think it's easy to say that markets never price this in because markets simply don't know what to make of these risks. So I do think that a lot of these risks are objectively higher than what is priced in. What is unpredictable is what it will take for people to focus on them. And as I said, in the Korean context, I think it could be rather less than people are sort of focusing on. It's not actual conflict. It just could be a tweet in the middle of the night from Donald Trump that gets people thinking that maybe something is happening.
So the message I'm sensing here is to remain vigilant. Thank you so much for your time and your insights. That was Dr. Michael Spencer, Managing Director and Global Head of Economics Research, as well as the Chief Economist and Head of Research with Asia Pacific Deutsche Bank.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Get to Old Navy for star-spangled style. Right now, everything's on sale, up to 60% off. That's right, get everything from tees, shorts, dresses, and swim, all at 60% off. Now till July 7th at Old Navy and OldNavy.com. Valid through 7/7, select styles only.